Hello, folks. This is Kevin, family of Hines. This is Rice's show called the Who Are You Show. Rice originally started this show to try to educate people as to who they are and let them know that they're not some fictional entity. They're not some sort of a U.S. citizen or anything like that. They are creatures, are human beings, men and women, who were created in the image of God. And he started the show to help everybody understand just exactly who they were. If they thought they were a U.S. citizen, and then they got mad because everybody was violating their rights, he wanted to teach them that that's not who they really were. They are under the King, King Jesus, and he is the King. We are subjects of him. He owns and rules everything. Reggie's not with us tonight. He has another engagement, and so he asked me if I'd take over for him tonight. First of all, I want to claim my right to free speech. I claim Article 1, Section 8 of the Texas Constitution, and my right to freely speak my opinions. I don't give legal advice. I'm not an attorney, and so I'm just giving my personal opinions and repeating some of the things that have been said to me just as a matter of information. I'm not a part of any movement or anything like that. I'm just demonstrating to you how I enforce my unalienable rights, demonstrate my unalienable rights. I'm not a part of any movement. I'm just want to make sure that people don't violate my rights. That's simply all I do. Rice, Reggie spoke to Rice a week or so ago, and Rice is doing much, much better every day. He's getting stronger and stronger. And so at any rate, I want to make sure that you be sure and keep him in your prayers. We want to make sure that he gets stronger and stronger, and we want to get him back on the show here. The other thing I want to bring up also is I want to encourage you to please support the radio station here. WWFAR is a wonderful radio station, and for just a mere $15 a month, you can support them, and in return, they give you an archives subscription for the month. And that archives subscription entitles you to go back in the archives for this week and download this show. You can download John Bryant's show. Randy Yarbrough's got some great shows on here. Al Addisk is still being played. Jack and Margie Flynn, LB Bork. I mean, they've got an all-star lineup on this radio station. And there's not a one of you out there who can't afford $15 a month to help support this station. So I want you to get out there and keep them going. Without this station, you're going to lose a lot of good information. These people, this show, Bryant's show, Yarbrough, Addisk, Flynn, Bork, all of them, just listening to them is the beginning point at which you begin your research. They're going to talk about things that are going to hit your hot button. Certain things that are a crisis in your life, they bring up a topic or something, and you say, hey, that's something I need to hear. I need to listen to that. Oh, man, these guys are talking exactly what I need to hear. And based on that, you start your research. I am constantly getting people asking me and sending me emails asking, where do I start to research? I want to do research, but I don't know where to start and everything. And the best place to start is listen to some of these people and take what they say. Don't necessarily use it until you check it out and research it. But that's where you start your research. You get a starting point from someone who really knows what they're talking about on these shows. And in most cases, probably 95% of the cases, the guests that John Bryant and Randy Yarbrough and Al Addisk and the Flynns and L.B. Bork have on their shows pretty well know what they're talking about. There are a few exceptions where there are some misstatements and something like that. And, you know, even Reggie and I have made misstatements a couple of times. But for the most part, that's where you start your research. and you become a researcher by starting there and then expanding from that point. So please support the radio station, $15 a month, and get that archive subscription. It's good for a full month. Also, we want to talk about Larry's website tonight, tapesite.com, www.tapesite.com, tapesite.com. It's been down for several weeks now, and he is in the process of getting it put back up. It's probably going to be another week or so before it's back up. But if you need to get any tapes or CDs or DVDs from him, you can email him at texanlae@yahoo.com. That's texanlae@yahoo.com. texanlae@yahoo.com. So at any rate, be sure and contact him for your needs on any replays of information that he has. Next thing I want to talk about, very interesting. I got a phone call from a fellow the other day, a friend of mine here in the Dallas area, and I'm going to relate to you exactly what he told me. For obvious reasons, I'm going to respect his privacy, and I'm going to address him and his wife as Mr. and Mrs. ABC. Mr. and Mrs. ABC have federal tax liens against them filed by the Internal Revenue Service. She has decided that she wants to refile her past returns using 1040s and get back in the good on the good side of the IRS again. He, on the other hand, has decided he wants to refile his past returns using cracking the code. And so they both are of the opinion that that's going to get rid of these IRS liens. And so he went ahead and he filed his past returns for about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years of past returns using cracking the code. And he refiled and sent them in back in May of last year. His wife has recently got all her stuff together, and she went and talked to a tax attorney here in the Dallas area and to get him to help her get her past returns done on 1040s. And so she told the tax attorney what she wanted to do, and the tax attorney asked about her husband, Mr. ABC, and she explained to him that he was using the cracking the code method. And so the tax attorney said, quote, "That cracking the code will do him no good. We all work for the crown." Did you hear that, folks? We all work for the crown. This is coming out of an attorney's mouth. You don't find very many attorneys who blow it like he did. He shot his mouth off when he shouldn't have. And there are times when attorneys who are talking to Randy Kelton accidentally say something that they shouldn't be saying either, and they answer a lot of questions for us when they shoot their mouth off. But this guy said, "We all work for the crown," and that just confirms exactly what we have thought for a long time. Well, in a nutshell, just to let you know about cracking the code, Mr. ABC, who refiled 6, 8 years of tax returns using cracking the code back in May, this past month, late February, received releases of lien from the IRS. So anybody who tells you that this cracking the code stuff doesn't work, we got a guy right here in Dallas who has received letters from the IRS releasing the liens, and so it's obviously working. Now don't send me an email and ask me who he is and how you can get in touch with him or anything, because I'm not going to respond to those. I respect this man's privacy, and I'm just telling you what he told me, and I have seen the release of lien letters that he got from the IRS, so I can verify that he did receive them. But I won't go any further than that. I don't endorse any products or anything. You need to do your own research, your own homework, and decide what is best for your own situation. Tonight, after Reggie called me, first thing I decided I wanted to do was I want to get Randy Kelton back on the line here with you, because Randy is, he's got some very powerful information. And if you're out there saying, oh, no, I don't want to hear Randy again, listen, folks, every time I hear Randy, I pick up something new. And I listen to the CDs of Randy's presentations here in Dallas over and over and over, and every single time I pick up something new that I didn't pick up before. And I want to emphasize that this is so vitally important to you. Now, this is not just Texas law. Every state is probably, and I'm going to bet, probably 99% chance that every single state has these provisions dealing with the criminal complaints. And if you want to get somebody's attention, I guarantee you this is the way to do it. Now, before I explain a little bit more here, Randy Kelton's website is jurisimprudence.com. That's jurisimprudence.com. jurisimprudence.com. Now, last week, he came to Dallas last Saturday and did a big seminar for us here, he and another fellow. And DVDs are available from Larry at texanlae@yahoo.com. You can email Larry at texanlae@yahoo.com and arrange to get those DVDs of Randy Kelton's seminar this past weekend. Now, I want to explain to you why I continue to emphasize Randy Kelton. We have a man here in Dallas, in fact, it's Reggie's father, Audrey. And Audrey is known to have a lead foot when it comes to driving. The man is 70-some-odd years old, but he loves that accelerator on his car. And so, you know, Reggie's told you over and over that his dad's gotten like 37 tickets in the last couple of years or so. And, you know, the local authorities, although they can't do anything because of Reggie's paperwork, they continue to try to harass Mr. Zeno. And they do a pretty good job of it. But I tell you what, there's not a stronger man anywhere than Mr. Zeno, because this man, he has no problem sitting in the county jail. He will not give up. He will not sign papers. He won't sign any bond papers or anything. The man is just, he's an iron man. That's all it is. He is just an iron man. And recently, he was arrested on a traffic charge, a warrant for some past tickets. Now, these past tickets were supposed to have been done away with based on time served. When he was held for 30 days, and Judge Pass dismissed all the tickets based on time served. And after 30-some-odd days, he released Mr. Zeno. Well, it turns out old Judge Pass lied through his teeth, and nothing was ever done. And those warrants are still hanging out there, and so they picked up Mr. Zeno and took him to the county jail. Well, the county jail, they didn't really warn him, and so they called the city of Richardson and said, hey, you got a warrant out for him, come and get him. So they were kind of piddling around, and they really didn't warn him either. They just had the warrants out there. And so Reggie called them and said, look, you either warn him or you don't. If you warn him, you better go get him, because I'm not going to let you just sit there and let him rot in the county jail. So the city of Richardson decided to go get him, and they took him to Richardson jail. And that's where Randy Kelton comes in. Randy came down to Dallas, and he went to the county jail, talked to the sheriff. Immediately thereafter, he went to the district attorney's office and had an hour-long conversation there. Then he went to the city of Richardson Municipal Court, and he demanded to look at a copy of Mr. Zeno's file. The clerk refused to let him see it, even though it's public information. Randy Kelton picked up his telephone and dialed 911 and had the Richardson police come out to arrest the clerk of the municipal court. Randy doesn't just talk a good game. He actually proves it, and here he did that. He says he calls 911 to have people arrested, and by George, he did it. He told the clerk, look, I'm not interested in going after you. I want to see the judge. And he sat down out there in the lobby and waited. And he got in there and talked to the judge, and that judge, I don't know what Randy said, but I tell you what, when the judge came out to the bench and was trying to talk with Mr. Zeno, all of a sudden, that judge was stuttering and stammering around, and he couldn't even according to Mr. Zeno, he was just stuttering and apologizing to Mr. Zeno and everything right and left, and he couldn't even read the paper, the papers that were in front of him. He was stuttering around, and Mr. Zeno even said that the clerk who was standing there was just grinning up a storm because she'd never seen the judge and so baffled and everything. He's always, you know, very direct and everything, and very professional. And here he didn't even know what to say. And so finally he let Mr. Zeno go. So I'm telling you folks, when you know how to get in these people's face with criminal complaints, and you file the criminal complaints against these judges, they don't like criminal complaints. The judges especially. So you gotta remember that this is absolutely very important information. And these people are scared silly of Randy. And so at any rate, maybe Reggie will give you more details on that situation next week. But for right now, at least you have an idea as to how powerful these criminal complaints are. And so I'm going to play Randy's, start off with Randy's talk to us here in Dallas back on October 4th, and I want you to listen to it again because this is vital information. So here we go.
Start out with, I've been studying this for some 20 years, but I've been doing it by myself, and I've looked at a number of groups, and when I ran into them, they all seemed to be going in a different direction than I was. I'm a combat veteran. Got out of the military, and the government told me that although I was mustering out of the service, I was still bound by my oath. That oath to protect this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, when I swore to that oath, I meant it. And then about 20 years ago, I spent the night in jail for driving with a headlight out. And that just didn't seem right. So I got out the penal code and code of criminal procedure, and I read them. And then I looked at what was actually being done, and I thought, have I stepped through the looking glass? Maybe there's some really sophisticated stare decisis that I've missed that changed everything. So I started digging, and what I found is an very ugly, ugly story. But it's taken 20 years to get here. I have a website, yoursimprudence.com. It's just kind of halfway set up. It's just a list of directories. But on there's a document called the Frog Farm Conspiracy. And that document demonstrates, I call it the Frog Farm Conspiracy, or how Texas criminal justice became a street gang. Street gang is a ongoing criminal enterprise with a recognizable hierarchy, and we have one. There is no criminal prosecution in Texas that's legal. Does anybody here have a criminal issue right now? Well, you'll be glad to know, the way things are done now, it's virtually impossible for the courts to prosecute you legally. Most every step from arrest to trial is not only wrong, it is very specifically against particular law. And it's not just against particular law, it's against law for a very specific purpose. Anybody here have any idea what the average conviction rate in Texas is? According to the Criminal Justice Oversight Council, it's virtually 100%. It's not exactly 100%, but statistically it rounds up to it. Everybody takes the deal. And the reason everybody takes the deal is every step from arrest to trial is structured in a way to put you in a position where you have no reasonable alternative but to take the deal. And they play on our fears. When I figured this out, I came to another problem. I wondered, how on earth could it ever get this way? At first, I blamed the police, just being a bunch of jerks, not to give me misery. But I know a lot of police. And most of the police I know don't like this system one little bit. And one thing you'll find out, if you think you're afraid of this system, you need to talk to your police. They are terrified of it. They arrest people every day. They arrest people because it's their job and their duty. And they see them put through this courts and just ran through the ringer. And what led me to what I do, it partly is their fear of the system. You guys think you know it's bad out there? The police really know it's bad out there, and the last thing they want is to be in your shoes. They get in your shoes, they know what's going to happen to them. And it gave us a leverage. So, once I figured all of this out and realized what the problem was, the answer was simple. But everybody seems to have missed it. We seem to have this need to trust our public officials. We don't, you know, I hear a lot of talk about being sovereign. Who out here thinks they're sovereign? Yeah. What does it mean to be sovereign? And I hear people talk about it, and they go in and they talk about all their sovereign rights. Well, when I think of sovereignty, I don't think of it that way. King Solomon, he's a sovereign. But mostly what you hear about King Solomon is not all the rights and powers that he had. But he was the one where, when a problem couldn't be solved by all the structures he had put in place, the problem was laid at his feet. The buck stopped there. How many of us has been given a ticket and didn't feel like we deserved that ticket? But we're busy. We got too much going, and you look at bucking up against this system, it's just too hard a fight. Well, I thought it was the police that was the problem, then I thought it was with the prosecutors and then the judges. It wasn't any of those. It was you. And it was you and it was me, because we didn't do our job. We hire our police to protect us from ourselves. We hire our police to give us tickets out here. I live back out in the country, and there's two little blacktop roads that come together, and there's a stop sign. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And I used to stop at the stop sign every day, and it annoyed me. What in the heck is the stop sign doing out here? As sure as I run this thing, there's going to be some dirty, rotten cop over there just waiting for me. That's why he's here, so he can give me a ticket. Well, I pulled up to that intersection one day. I looked to my left. I looked to my right. Nothing. I started to pull out, and whoosh, a SWAT truck went by. I had to get out of my car and walk out in the street to figure out where it came from. I looked down this road, and I was looking down the blacktop, but it veered just slightly, just enough, so I had the impression I was looking down the road, but I couldn't see that side. That stop sign was there to warn me of a danger that I couldn't necessarily see. And I only paid attention to it because I paid my policeman to make sure I did. And it's probably the reason I'm not dead right now. So we hire police in our courts to protect us from ourselves and each other. But we don't pay them the same courtesy. We are sovereign. These laws that we have out here, they are my laws, and they're your laws. But mostly they're mine. And these public servants, they work for me. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was in Johnson County Courthouse talking to an assistant district attorney, and he was a little smart mouth. And I told him, Mr. Fry, I think you misunderstand something. You're a public servant.
Yes, Mr. Kelton, I'm a public servant.
Yes. You're the servant.
I am the master. And you are not to forget it. I won't forget it, Mr. Kelton. Best you don't.
And I meant that. Because if he steps this far across a legal line, I've already got the criminal complaint blanks in my briefcase. I'll have that puppy out and filled out so quick to make his head spin, I'll be down to the nearest court. You go down to the nearest court with it, and you sit down in the courtroom while they're having court, or you go up to the bailiff, and you tell the bailiff, tell the judge I have business with the court. The bailiff will say, may I tell the judge the nature of your business? No, you may not. I'll take that up with the judge. And the bailiff will always say, well, I have to tell the judge something. Tell him I have business with the court. You're dismissed. And he's ticked. He is not happy, so he runs up to the judge, jibber-jibber-jibber-jibber, the judge, jibber-jibber-jibber-jibber, and he looks out at this guy sitting out here in war clothes with a folder. And the judge wants to know what's in it. And the judge, when he finishes his hearing, he'll always say, and you've probably seen this in movies, where a circuit judge in the Western, so when he finishes his hearing, he'll say, does anyone else have business with the court? It's an American tradition. They don't do it anymore, but you can invoke it. So the judge will say, Mr. Kelton, I understand you have business with the court. Yes, Your Honor, I do. May I approach? That means, can I give you this document? He'll either say yes or send the bailiff over to get it. And when he opens it up, he's looking at a criminal complaint. Now he's ticked. He's been bushwhacked and he knows it. He's not a judge anymore now. He's a magistrate. And he has a very specific duty. You have invoked it. This works. But what I'm going to demonstrate here is not going to that magistrate. Because everything's illegal. If we give criminal complaints to magistrates, the magistrate's going to give it to the prosecuting attorney. And that's a criminal act. A magistrate under Article 1730 Code of Criminal Procedure is commanded, when he examines in the sufficiency of an allegation, when he's presented with a complaint, that's what he must do, that he's to seal all documents had in the hearing and forward it to the clerk at the top of court. Everybody gives complaints to prosecutors. Nothing in law directs a complaint to a prosecuting attorney. Nothing. If you give a complaint to a police officer, Article 213 says when a police officer is made known that a crime has been committed, he shall present the complaint to some magistrate. Don't say a thing about a prosecutor. When a prosecuting attorney is made known in any manner, the prosecuting attorney receives a complaint.
Okay, folks, the bell should have rung by now. And so I want you to stay tuned, and we're going to come back and finish up Randy's talk here. If you have any other needs regarding this type of information, be sure and contact Larry at his email address. That's Texan, L-A-E, at yahoo.com. That's T-E-X-A-N-L-A-E at yahoo.com. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never see no more.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. Around the world and on satellite.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you? If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Good evening, folks. We're back for the second half hour of the show. And just a reminder, if you have any questions that you'd like either Reggie or myself or somebody to offer an opinion on, you're welcome to email those to Reggie, and we'll answer them next week on the show. Reggie's email is rpzeno@sbcglobal.net. rpzeno@sbcglobal.net, and we'll give you an opinion as to how we would handle something like that, whatever your situation is, next week. And again, this is Randy Kelton's presentation of October 4th. This is vital information, folks. If you just view this as a simple replay, you're missing the point. You're not a researcher. You're not seeing the forest for the trees. This stuff is vital, and this is the way you get a judge's attention. When you start doing criminal complaints for violation of your rights, that's when you get attention, and they suddenly realize that they are the public servant, and you are the master, and you are not going to tolerate your rights being violated. That's why I tell you, folks, I am not a part of any movement. I am out here talking to people to make sure they understand that I'm protecting my unalienable rights. That's all I do. Paperwork and everything. I'm protecting my unalienable rights because people are trying to step all over them every day, and I'm just not going to let them do it. So at any rate, here we go with continuing with Randy's presentation.
Don't say a thing about prosecutor. and the prosecuting attorney is made known in any manner, the prosecuting attorney receives a complaint, 205 tells him he's to present the complaint to some magistrate. Everybody's directed to the magistrate. And the magistrate is directed to examine into the sufficiency of the complaint, and if he finds it sufficient, he's to seal all the documents forwarded to the clerk of the public court. None of them do that. When I said that no prosecution is legal, it's because of things just like this. You get arrested, they take you to jail. Well, Gershwin State has changed things. They said they could hold you long enough to do the things in an incidental to arrest up to 48 hours. City of Riverside versus State amended that to 24 hours. And what they've interpreted that to mean is you can be held 24 or 48 hours with impunity. And that's not true. The courts have held there shall be no set time limit, that a arresting officer's only defense against an allegation of false imprisonment for failure to timely take before a magistrate is a showing of due diligence and effort to locate a magistrate. While the courts have held that the actions incidental to arrest can be included in this time, if it takes them more time than it takes to book you to get you before a magistrate, the onus is on the policeman to show cause for the delay. If the delay is under 24 hours, the courts will now say the onus is on you. If you say he could have got me in front of a magistrate in 30 minutes, you have to prove he could have. If you show that he could have, then he's subject to false imprisonment until he can show otherwise. That's what the law says. And then when you're brought before a magistrate, did anybody ever heard the term magistration? Anybody ever looked it up? You know, I typed that into Microsoft Word, and it puts this little red line under it. It doesn't recognize it. I don't either. I've seen it used in Supreme Court cases, but it doesn't exist. It's a legal fiction. It's a complex legal fiction. 1517 is where the prosecutors, you see, prosecutors have been advised to give legal advice to the lower courts and the police. Now, I'm sure the legislature, when they did that, they thought this was a real efficient use of learned counsel. But it is a prescription for disaster. It's a prescription to create just exactly the circumstance we have right now. Say you're a busy prosecutor, and you've got cases coming out of your ears, and you'd have to clear these dockets. And then a policeman comes to you, or a municipal judge, or a JP judge comes to you and asks you for advice. What kind of advice are you going to give him? You're going to give him advice that's going to make your job more difficult? You're going to advise him toward practices and procedures that serve the prosecutorial interest. And that's exactly what's happened. And through what appears to be a series of seemingly minor adjustments toward administrative convenience and adjudicated expediency, things have been adulterated so far out of focus they don't even resemble law. When you're arrested, the idea was that a policeman should not hold the key to the jailhouse door. That we gave policemen the right to arrest you if they personally observed you committing a crime. And they've extended that to say if you're in a position that would give a reasonable person cause to believe that you have just committed a crime or are about to commit a crime, he can arrest you. But but he must take you before a neutral magistrate and explain himself. And it's that magistrate that decides if you go to jail or not, not the policeman. Well, in law, there is only one hearing that fits that description. 211 Code of Criminal Procedure says when a magistrate sits for the purpose of examining into a criminal allegation, that is an examining trial. Chapter 16 of the Code of Criminal Procedure covers as an examining trial. It's a whole chapter, and they do none of it. Is anybody here, does anybody remember the program Night Court? Comedy used to be on. Well, it was a comedy, but constitutionally it was dead on. Persons arrested, they're brought down to the jail, and a prosecutor is appointed to represent them. And Larroquette was the prosecutor. He would represent the policeman, and they would both go before the judge, and the policeman would make his case for holding this person. The defense counsel, appointed for the purpose of this hearing, would make a case for releasing this person. And the neutral judge would decide whether or not they stood to answer for the crime or not. That's what Chapter 16 prescribes. None of that happens. Because 1517 says that the magistrate must advise you of your rights, and then he can set bail or release you at your liberty. And what prosecutors advised is that magistrates do what 1517 requires them to do. He didn't tell them that 1517 was instituted after Miranda. 1517 instructed the judge, before you do anything else, you advise this person of their rights. Then you go on to the reason why you're here, which is Chapter 16, an examining trial. Well, prosecutors advised the judges that they didn't have to do the rest. All they had to do was what 1517 said. So you go before a magistrate. The magistrate accepts evidence from the accuser in the form of a criminal affidavit. Now, when evidence is entered against you in court, it triggers a whole myriad of rights. But in this case, it triggers none. The accuser gets to make accusations against you. You're given no opportunity to face your accuser. You're given no opportunity for an attorney. You're given no opportunity to rebut the evidence. The magistrate accepts what the policeman says out of hand. And then the prosecutor told him that, well, you're not learned counsel, and you're not going to have to try this case. I'm the guy's going to have to do that, so you should send that to me so I can give you legal advice. That's the only way a complaint can go to a prosecuting attorney, because he was required to give them legal advice. Well, magistrates think they're supposed to send them to prosecutors. I bushwhacked a district judge in Denton County, Judge Shipman, and he was unhappy because when he opened the file, he looked at criminal charges against the district clerk, charging her with secret and criminal complaints against the district attorney from the grand jury. And he was ticked. He was not happy. He said, well, Mr. Kelton, what do you suggest I do with these? Normally I would give them to the district attorney. I said, yes, Your Honor, if you give those to the district attorney, I'll consider that a criminal act. Oh, you would, Mr. Kelton? Yes, I would. I'd consider that the act of tampering with a government document. He was required to examine into the sufficiency of those allegations and then seal all documents had in the hearing, forward them to the clerk of the proper court. But he didn't know that. I went to him because I asked for the meanest, the most experienced judge in the district. And everybody pointed to Shipman. And he didn't have a clue as to what he was supposed to do. Because prosecutors have been advising judges to do it a different way. Judge Shipman got out of law school, and he went to work for a law firm. In law school, they teach you all about law. They don't teach you anything about practice. You learn practice when you get out here in the field. So they went to work for a law firm, and they showed him how things were done. He was probably like most other attorneys. When he got out of law school, he probably figured he was going to set things to right and change the world. What he found out, what he was really going to do, he was going to kiss arrogant judges behind, because if he didn't, they would put him out of business. And he would do exactly what they wanted him to do. And he'd also do what prosecutors wanted him to do, or prosecutors wouldn't make deals for his clients. In either case, they put him out of business. So if anybody here thinks your attorney is going to get up before the court and vigorously represent your rights, you're dreaming. I was in court in Wichita Falls representing myself, and the judge read me this little sermon about people who represent themselves. And I told him how much I appreciated that, and in line with that good advice, I'd like to ask him for some more. The judge, where can I find an attorney who will come up here and vigorously represent my rights? Where can I find an attorney that will ask this bailiff over here to arrest you if you violate one of my rights, like I will? And then if you can find that attorney, where can I find one that can be certified sane? Because he'd have to be out of his mind. Well, unfortunately, that's the case. You know, if you have an attorney appointed to represent you, and he comes to you and he gets you to make a deal, he gives that to the prosecutor, you know what the court's going to pay him? About $350. Yeah. If he puts on a vigorous defense for you, you know what the court's going to pay him? Yeah. $350. So what would you do? What can he do? Most attorneys pay their office fees and their office help with court-appointed cases. They get appointed to represent a client. They go sit down with the client and they say, okay, here's the deal. Take it or spend up a year in jail waiting for trial. I had a sheriff's deputy try to kill me. And they arrested me to hide what he did. And the prosecutor actually, they brought me up to the courthouse, set me down in the courtroom, and he put this deal in front of me. And he said, here's the deal. Take it or spend up to a year in jail waiting for trial. Now, he knew I knew better. But he just didn't know anything else to do. That's all they did. Everyone I've talked to who's had court-appointed counsel tells the exact same story. Counsel comes to them, says, here's the deal. They want to tell them about what went on. They don't want to hear it. Here's the deal. Take it or spend up your jail wait for trial. Everybody takes the deal. And attorneys don't have any choice. And so Judge Shipman, he got out of law school and went to work for this law firm, and he found out how things were done. And he never really questioned it. This is how everybody does it, so it must be right. I have a friend who is the county attorney in Wise County. He just introduced me to his new assistant. He said, now, Mr. Kelton may come down here sometime and give you a pretty hard time. And he's going to tell you some things about law you're probably not going to like to hear. But you got to be sure that he's not going to tell you unless he's done his homework. Now, Greg trusts me, and he believes, he's looked at what I presented to him, and he said, yes, Mr. Kelton, this looks right. And I have to agree, in reading the law, it appears to be the way you say it is. I said, well, Greg, why are you still doing it this way? Well, there just has to be something that you're missing. And that's in the back of all their minds. In fact, there's not anything I'm missing. It's just we have all these officials, all of them got out of law school, all of them went through the same indoctrination, doing things the way it's always been done, and this is an incredible piece of momentum to overcome, especially when some jackleg pro se know-nothing comes down and starts reading the Riot Act. And I try to be easy to get along with, and one thing I try not to do is ever get in a confrontation with them. And I don't let them get mad at me. But it is incredibly difficult. That's why I'm finally here. I've been studying 20 years, digging out these parts and pieces. And I found out what is wrong. And I also found how to fix it. And it's common that problems that seem incredibly difficult, in the end, they turn out to be simple. This problem is incredibly simple. If you read the Frog Farm conspiracy, it is complex and convoluted. You'll have to read through the whole thing and then go back and read it again before all these pieces will start fitting together. But for all its complexity, the fix is simple, and it goes back to this notion of sovereignty. This judge had no idea what to do. But he looked out at me and he knew I did. And he knew I was there looking for a reason to land on him like a ton of bricks. And I'm in work clothes. What should I do with these? No one I'd give them to the prosecuting attorney. I said, well, yeah, if you did that, I'd consider that a crime. But 1730 requires that you give them, seal them up and send them to the clerk of the court. But since he's the accused, that'd probably be a bad idea. So, well, Mr. Cullen, just what do you suggest I do with them? I said, well, Judge, you're learned counsel and a high-level judge. Well, I figured you'd come up with something real interesting to do with them. Well, Mr. Cullen, I'll just give these to the foreman of the grand jury. Thank you very much, Your Honor. I appreciate that. Now, he's really ticked. And he says, Mr. Cullen, don't you want a suit? So I was dressed in work clothes. I always go dressed in work clothes. Yes, yes. Well, yes, Your Honor. Last count, I want 35. Well, why aren't you wearing one in my courtroom? I said, well, Judge, I didn't want to be confused with all these suits. A whole room full of attorneys. Judge, they got lots of scruples. And all of them for civil. I'm sorry, I told you first that I was here on a scruple. And only got one. I didn't want to be confused with all these suits. They got lots of scruples. And all of them for sale or rent. Well, the judge knew exactly what I was saying. I'm not one of these attorneys you can screw tomorrow to get back at me. I'm not going to be bringing clients in front of you. So I don't care if you're ticked off. You get mad as you want to. He had no jurisdiction over me, and he knew it, and he knew that I knew it, and he was real unhappy. He took the complaints, and he did give them to the grand jury. They tossed him out. But I was in a learning curve. I don't give them to judges anymore. Unless I want to nail the judge. The only time I do that is if I'm setting up a judge. If anybody here has ever been harassed by the police, we got a way to fix that. Recently, I had a friend of mine who's on the sheriff's department come to me. He said, Randy, what'd you do to the sheriff? I said, well, I haven't done nothing to him lately. Why? He said, well, we had roll call this morning, and he asked here, who here knows Randy Kelton? And about half of us raised our hands. He said, look, you are not to stop him. You are not to cite him. And whatever you do, don't put that SOB in my jail. Because the last time I was in his jail was when this deputy tried to kill me. And I ran them through the ringer. Every law I could find that they violated, I filed on them. The prosecutor threw him out. Then I filed against the prosecutor for throwing him out. Right now, we have them all in front of the grand jury. A little complex. I got the attorney general, and I'll show you guys how to get the attorney general. There's only one way to get him. I had complaints against local judges, police, district judge, but you're within the district. How to get out of the district? You know, I said earlier that nothing directs a complaint to a prosecuting attorney. Well, that's not exactly true. One place directs a complaint to a prosecuting attorney: the Open Records Act. The Open Records Act says if you have a complaint under the Act, you're to file it with the district attorney. Except when the department is the district attorney, in which case you must file the complaint with the attorney general. Well, when I set them up, and I always set them up, I set them up under a conspiracy because everything you do is wrong. Every person along the way is violating law. So the only reasonable conclusion, they're all conspiring with one another. So once I get everybody set up all the way to the district judge, then I go put in an information request to the district attorney. And it's one he's not going to like one little bit. Has anyone here ever looked through a criminal court file in a district court lately? There are things you'll find in there. You'll find indictments. You'll find informations. You'll find court-appointed counsel. You'll find bail revocations. But there's one thing you won't find. It's a criminal complaint. When I came across this, I thought, holy mackerel, this is the elephant in the corner. In this country, no complaint can commence, no prosecution can commence, except by verified affidavit by some credible citizen. When a policeman files a criminal complaint, he doesn't do that as a policeman. No public official can file a complaint in his public capacity. The reason for that is the government can never be the accuser and the prosecutor. Ah, the king used to be able to do that, and our founders said that's not happening anymore. Only some credible citizen can initiate a prosecution. My mother warned me about this. I lost my place. She said it was going to get worse. Oh, my daughter did this. Puberty. Hers, not mine. She said, okay, hey, the policeman, when he files the complaint, he does it in his personal capacity. If he files that complaint, it's directed to some magistrate.
Okay, folks, hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you next week.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Life removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and